Talo Falava, I'm Sosef Womoli. Join me for Sister Sounds, a music show dedicated to showcasing the breadth of talented female musicians and performers from across the Pacific. Sister Sounds will bring you amazing local talent mixed with the sounds and vibe our Islander audiences love by artists from across the seas as well. Search up ABC Sister Sounds to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
I disclose my status to them, and still men are refusing to wear condoms.
When people can experience sex as both pleasurable and safe, condom use becomes a more natural and consistent choice.
Recently, I met a woman from Fiji who's HIV positive. She contracted the virus through sex with a casual partner. One of the things she told me that really stuck is how difficult it is to get men in Fiji to wear condoms. The thing is, HIV rates in Fiji are soaring. In fact, the country now has the fastest growing HIV rates in the world. So if you're having sex with a non-monogamous partner, wearing a condom should be front of mind. And this isn't just about Fiji. Papua New Guinea declared a HIV crisis in June 2025 after more than 11,000 new infections were recorded the previous year. Across the rest of the Pacific, we don't even have a clear picture because testing is limited. What we do know is that condoms are the cornerstone of preventing HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. But that message isn't getting through, particularly to men. And when women ask to use protection, it can be difficult and sometimes even dangerous. I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about negotiating condom use with men. The woman I met is someone I'll call Sarah. That's not her real name. She asked to remain anonymous. You might recognize her voice from our recent episode on HIV transmission to babies. But this time, she had a lot to say about how hard it is to get men in Fiji to wear condoms, even when they know she's HIV positive. Before we get into that, I asked Sarah to take me back to the moment she found out she had HIV.
Truth be told, I thought I was going to die. Up until that time, I thought HIV is a death sentence. So for me, I thought I'm going to die. It's like I got diagnosed with cancer.
Did your casual partner know that he was HIV positive?
He did not, and also he was in denial as well. 1 year after I informed him that I have tested positive, I'm on medication, up till a year later, he was still in denial. But just recently, he has finally accepted his diagnosis, and he's gotten tested, has started treatment, and thankfully is still alive. But I do regularly check up on him as well, because for a lot of men in Fiji, they don't health seek. And HIV care is so much stigma, so, you know, it's a very hard thing to ensure that the straight men in Fiji comply, like pill compliance. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you about negotiating condom use? How willing are men to wear condoms in your experience?
I am saying this as like a straight woman, so I can only speak to heterosexual experiences. So we have zero condom culture in Fiji. Not only just like usual, like condom use, but for me personally, after contracting HIV, anyone that I have sexual relations with, I disclose my status to them just out of courtesy, and still men are refusing to wear condoms. Half the time they don't believe that someone has HIV because I look healthy. And I've actually asked them as well why they are so hesitant. They say, we've never bought it. We don't know how to use it. We don't think it would be good or pleasurable. So we don't have a condom culture in Fiji. And informing someone of your HIV status is also not scaring people to wear condoms. So I really don't know what the solution is to that.
That was Sarah, a name we're using to protect her privacy, talking about just how difficult it can be to negotiate condom use with men in Fiji. The good news is that Sarah is taking her daily HIV medication and the virus is now undetectable in her system. She's healthy, she's living her life and doing well.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
So when it comes to sex, who's responsible for putting that condom on? And what are the risks for women when a man just says no? Dolores Devesi works with the International Planned Parenthood Federation in the Pacific. She says condom use, like preventing pregnancy and STIs, should be a shared responsibility. So why is it proving so difficult to get men to cover up?
There's perceptions and beliefs that condoms reduce pleasure and intimacy. It disrupts the momentum. It ends up men also accusing women of infidelities. There's often, you know, it's often tagged to someone who hasn't been faithful in a relationship. So there's a lot, you know, that women fear and are risk of when they are trying to negotiate to use condoms.
What are the risks to women in trying to negotiate condom use?
There's often rape that happens, violence. There's often, you know, rejection. And that's often the fears that women have to think through and have had to go through to be able to negotiate condom use. And these are, you know, real life experiences where the men can be quite forceful and therefore the women giving in for fear of not only of rejection, but often it ends up in violence. And that's where often rape also comes into the picture.
Can you spell out why condoms are so important?
Condoms is a simple and one way to protect ourselves from STIs, from HIV, but also from pregnancy, from unintended pregnancies. Where there's a lot of HIV cases, condoms are often also readily available and accessible, but also a cheaper option for some, maybe not for everybody and maybe not accessible to everybody, but it is one of the simplest forms of protection that women can use. And we do have not only male condoms, but there's also female condoms that are available too.
Dolores, are there any cultural dynamics that affect a woman's ability to negotiate condom use with her partner?
There's always cultural and traditional, you know, influences that impacts on women. You know, if you're looking from a religious perspective, but also from culture, abstinence and modesty are kind of expectations of women within our communities, within families that we grow up in. And, you know, and there's a lot more pressure within, I guess, not only the Melanesian society, but this is across all the other communities in the region. It is based from patriarchal expectations, a lot of stigma surrounding it, but also, I guess, shame and embarrassment within the family. Just imagine you're in a village and there's news going around that, you know, you and your partner have had an argument over the use of condoms. That's going to be shunned upon by everybody within the village because of the cultural and religious traditional expectations of the role of women within a relationship. It also speaks to the power imbalances that exist. As I had mentioned earlier, it often ends up in violence, often in cases of rape, where women are unable to negotiate a safer and a protected sex life for them.
What is the stigma around using condoms for men? You mentioned the perception about pleasure, but are there other stigmas?
Mainly, it's a perception of men. And there's also, we've also received feedback from women where I think the option that they should be looking into is different types of condoms. Yes, the common ones are probably doesn't have as much lubrication as others. Some prefer, you know, like the ripped condoms. So the main, from what the feedback we have received through the services that we provide, is mainly around the perception of the feeling and that it won't feel real as having skin-to-skin sex. I think there's not a lot of stigma for men. It's more for women. And therefore, we're seeing a lot of, you know, low intake of female condoms, but also women worried about, you know, women have always, and girls have always worried about using tampons, for example. They might get lost in the vagina, and similar perceptions with female condoms as well. But there's a lot more pressure on women and stigma than it is for men.
Is there a demographic of women who finds it most difficult to negotiate condom use, for example, older or younger women?
What we are finding is it's more so in relation to those who live in urban centers than to those in rural areas. It's aligned to education, so knowing where to go for help, knowing where to access condoms. If the condoms are not accessible in, for example, in rural areas, then of course the rural women won't be able to access them and won't know, won't have conversations about the use of condoms. In the urban areas, we have a lot more of the working population. I think there's been questions around, is there also a difference between young women and older women? But what we're finding is that younger women are a lot more open to talking about sex. They're a lot more open to be able to protect themselves and have a say compared to older women who may also be, you know, we're brought up in tradition, we're brought up in religion, and therefore openly talking about condoms may be uncomfortable. But the younger women are definitely, you know, have a lot more to say and have a lot more to say about their bodies and what they know is right or wrong.
Can you speak to how broad the issue is beyond Fiji and throughout the Pacific?
It is a common trend across the Pacific. We're seeing also low intakes of condom use in other countries. But if you look at some of the recent stats, you'll see a lot more, a huge increase in unplanned or unintended teenage pregnancies. We're seeing, you know, where STIs have also, the stats for that, the data have also increased. And of course, we know that HIV is on the increase, not only here in Fiji, but we're seeing pockets of it across the countries. And the key message for us is, as particularly not just for young people, but for everybody and also for women, that there are also female condoms and that this may not be the only way, but it is one way that you can protect yourself from STIs and from unplanned pregnancies.
What successful strategies have you seen in Fiji where women, and especially young women, learn practical ways to negotiate condom use with male partners?
Being able to have spaces where young people, but also women who feel safe, where they can come in and talk to somebody. So our services also provide counseling. It provides confidentiality. There are some, you know, some of the population who would prefer to come to one of our member associations clinics rather than go to another certain clinic for confidentiality reasons. So it's about making sure that, you know, like I said, that the services are there. It's important that it becomes part of our day-to-day communication. We want to also look at, you know, empowering more women, that they know about their bodies, about the rights that they have in making sure that they are able to protect themselves, but also having discussions with men and with boys that this is a shared responsibility, that, you know, it takes two people to have sex and that it requires everyone to make sure that you and your partner are also safe. I think One of the other biggest challenges we have, as I mentioned earlier, about accessibility and the role that we play as well, is to make sure that condoms in particular are also accessible. And we do have organizations here in Fiji who are out there. They also have moonlight clinics or clinics in the evenings. They go to the nightclubs. There's condom dispensers across the city. But if people don't know about them and they're not comfortable, they won't be accessing them. So the conversation needs to continue to be had.
That was Dolores Devesi from the International Planned Parenthood Federation in the Pacific. I found that conversation really interesting, especially learning more about female condoms. They're one option that can give women more control, particularly when negotiating condom use feels difficult or unsafe.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
Dolores introduced me to one of her younger colleagues at the Federation, someone who's trying to change the way we talk about condoms by talking about pleasure too. Jessica Work is part of the team behind the Pleasure Ninja Guide, a resource designed to help people talk openly about sexual pleasure through a Pacific lens. The idea is to move past the taboo around sex and start talking honestly about something that should be enjoyable for everyone involved. And yes, something that can still be about safety too. So why create a guide like this specifically for a Pacific audience?
It was important to make a guide that was culturally relevant because young people in the Pacific, they experience sexuality, they experience relationships, they experience intimacy. These are all normal human experiences, but the experiences within strong systems of our culture, of our faith and our community. And these shape how people think, how they speak, and how they engage when they talk about topics like sex and pleasure. And while they offer, in terms of what they see as protection, it is difficult for young people to openly discuss consent, communication, and relational well-beings in a way that feels true to them and feels safe and respectful. So it is really important to create a guide that recognizes our context in a way that we are able to also speak to it and create this comfortable, safe space for young people to be able to talk about it. So historically, while we were developing this guide, we saw that sexuality education in the region has been framed highly via colonial legacies and in prevention-focused approach. So it centers risk, it centers disease, it centers harms. And while these are also important, it leaves little room for positive, strengths-based conversations about pleasure, about respect, about healthy relationships. So as a result, many young people, they don't have the right information to navigate healthy relationships and navigate themselves, the understanding of their body, their body autonomy, their respect for other people. And so this guide was designed to be centered on Pacific realities, using language and values and approaches that resonated with how we feel and how we reflect on our relationships to be. So yes, it's really about creating that safe space in terms of our context. And the name itself, Pleasure in Asia, it was chosen with intention as well, because it draws from the colonial names of our region, Polynesia, Micronesia, and Melanesia, that were like divided us and defined by outsiders. So we wanted to reclaim that and reimagine that identity for ourselves. And that's why we named it Pleasure in Asia.
How do you talk to people about condom use in the context of pleasure?
Whenever we talk about condom use, it's often discussed in relation to risk. You know, like, let's prevent STIs, let's prevent unintended pregnancies. And yes, this framing is important, but it can unintentionally ignore one of the main reasons that people have sex, which is pleasure. And then because of this gap, many young people associate condoms with reduced sensation or with discomfort. So we've observed that both young men and young women commonly express that condoms take away that feeling, which becomes a real barrier to its consistent use. So when we look at condom through a pleasure lens, it shifts the conversation from protection versus enjoyment to how can protection enhance or at least maintain the pleasure. So instead of dismissing these real concerns, it acknowledges them as valid, as practical. And if people feel that condoms reduce pleasure, they are less likely to use them, right? So addressing pleasure directly is essential for effective STI prevention. So this is where like access and awareness as well becomes critical, because pleasure positive condom use means ensuring that people know about and they can also access options that improve the experience, such as lubricated condoms or those designed to enhance sensation, like ribbed or dotted ones. So lubrication itself is also very important. Without it, condoms can feel discomfort, or you can also increase friction, reinforcing the negative perceptions surrounding condoms. But more pleasurable options are available, but they are more expensive and less available in our Pacific region. So this creates, again, inequity in who can realistically practice safer sex in a way that still feels good. So the Pleasure in Asia guide speaks directly to this by encouraging open, stigma-free conversations about pleasure and condom use. And it highlights when pleasure is acknowledged, people are more willing to engage in safer practices. So discussing condoms through the lens of pleasure is not about promoting sex. It's about being honest about why people have sex and designing responses that meet those realities. So when people can experience sex as both pleasurable and safe, condom use becomes a more natural and consistent choice rather than them thinking it's a compromise that they have to make.
Jess, how do you talk about safety and consent without stigmatizing sex?
Safety and consent are at the core of these conversations, and it should always be at the core of every conversation that deals with sex, because one of the pleasure principles that are in the guide is rights first. This means we place sexual and human rights at the center. So that includes things like consent, autonomy, and privacy. So while pleasure can be personal, when it involves others, that it becomes a shared experience and a shared responsibility. That means it must exist in a space where everyone feels comfortable, everyone feels safe, everyone feels respected. So through other principles that we have, like loving yourself, embracing learning, talking openly, being flexible, thinking universally, we reinforce these importance of clear communication and mutual understanding. So in practice, this means you respecting your boundaries, checking in with your partners. Is this okay? Does this feel uncomfortable? Do you feel pain? And just ensuring that everyone involved feels safe and they're willing as well. Because once safety and consent are crossed, it's no longer pleasure. It becomes coercion, it becomes force. So these conversations make it clear in terms of pleasure and consent go hand in hand when speaking about sex, and you cannot have one without the other.
Why do you separate men and women when talking about pleasure?
When we talk about pleasure, sometimes we do separate men and women because we found that this creates a more safe, a more comfortable, a more trusting space for our participants, and it creates space for learning and sharing. So through CSC, which is Comprehensive Sexuality Education, and our Sexual and Reproductive Health and Rights sessions that our member associations run, facilitators have found that mixed groups sometimes limit openness because, you know, sex and pleasure, they're highly stigmatized topics, and participants, they feel shy, they feel embarrassed a bit, or they feel like they might say something and then feel judged by it if they speak in front of the opposite sex. But especially at the community level in rural areas, so separating those sessions help ease the discomfort and allows people to speak more freely and ask honest questions and share personal experiences without fear. So facilitators are also matched to the group. So men facilitating men, women facilitating women, which strengthens again that relatability, that trust, that connection. And these spaces, they can be quite, people can be become very vulnerable, more so than they've ever been with their own partners. So confidentiality, safety, and respect are really the root of it all. And separating groups creates that environment for open and meaningful dialogue.
And when it comes to men, how do you talk to them about condoms and preventing STIs?
Again, the starting point is the same. Always you create a safe space, you create a respectful space, because if you don't, that space doesn't feel safe or respectful, people don't want to open up, men and women. So whether that's men or mixed groups, it's really important to have that safe and open, respectful space. And it only works when the facilitator themselves as well, they're non-judgmental, they're grounded in trust, they're also, you know, relatable. So men feel more comfortable in sharing their experiences, their concerns, their beliefs, or even asking questions. So a key approach when talking to men is about framing condom use through communal care, which strongly resonates with the way Pacific communities are based. We have a current HIV campaign right now called For Them. So it's our For Them HIV campaign, which emphasizes that protecting your sexual health is not just an individual responsibility. It's about protecting your partner. It's about protecting your family. It's about protecting your wider community. So using condoms and getting tested becomes an act of care for them and not just for yourself. So from there, the conversation connects like practical prevention with real life realities, and condoms are explained as a simple but effective barrier that prevents the transmission of STIs, and it helps keep both the individual and their partners and the community safe. So rather stopping at information, it's also important to unpack why some men don't use condoms consistently. And again, going back to that conversation we had earlier about pleasure. So some common barriers that do come up are like cost or limited access, the perspectives around that it reduces pleasure, and lack of knowledge about options or lubrication as well. So instead of dismissing these concerns, the discussion focuses on the solution. For example, they can access free condoms at our member associations on the ground, introducing them to lubricants and providing lubricants, and exploring different types of condoms that can enhance sensation as well.
And is the same approach made towards women as well, especially about negotiating condom use with men?
Yes, in terms of having a safe environment, and definitely yes in terms of exploring the why. But you use that word negotiate, right? And that word is so frustrating, because women shouldn't have to bargain for their own safety. And but that's the reality of many Pacific women that they face. So the approach is both about empowering women now and shifting responsibility to men. So men, in terms of them having the power in the community and in families, that's why their approach is mostly like, you know, encouraging the safe space, because they also don't like to talk about their feelings. But for women, it's about empowering them as well as engaging more men. So with women, we start from a rights-based place, going back to our pleasure principles about rights first. You know, your body is yours. That means you have the right to safety. You have the right to consent. You have the right to protection. You have the right to say no. So we support this by building confidence and giving practical information about how they can use these in conversations, like expressing readiness about, I want a baby right now, or I think we should both be protected from STIs because of the rising HIV rates. So at the same time, we make it clear that the burden is not only on women alone. Change comes from working with men as well and helping them understand that condom use is a shared responsibility, and reinforcing that women's bodily autonomy must be respected in all relationships, including marriages as well. So supporting women isn't just, you know, it's not about negotiating. It's about empowering their voices, their choices, equipping them with information, reforming laws, and engaging men to change these attitudes and behaviors that stigmatize women and take away their choice as well.
That was Jessica Work from the International Planned Parenthood Federation in Fiji. It's so inspiring to hear a young person pushing back on the taboo around sex and opening up honest conversations about pleasure too. I hope this episode has given you some ideas and maybe a few tools to think about, especially if you're sexually active and particularly if you're in non-monogamous relationships. Protecting yourself matters. Wearing a condom matters, especially with HIV rates increasing the way they are across the Pacific. Thank you to my guests today, Jessica Work, Dolores Devesi, and Sarah, who shared her story with us anonymously. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Faleangafulu Inga Stunzna. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. Amtasol na lukimu next time.